You're listening to In Focus on 107.7 The Wolf. I'm John Damschroeder, and my guest today is the first person who's been on this program before that we've invited back for another dose of wisdom. I'm joined today by Ed Seidel, author of the important new book, Who Stole My Pension? How You Can Stop the Looting. This is a book Ed co-authored with Rich Dad, Poor Dad author Robert Kiyosaki. Now, the best-selling success of Rich Dad, Poor Dad series has made Who Stole My Pension quite a media sensation in recent days. Ed, it appears the world is beginning to wake up to the effect of high fees in public pensions and 401ks and how that steals value from the beneficiaries.
Absolutely, John. And the book is also global. We talk about how the global retirement crisis is due to the fact that we have over 2 billion people globally over the age of 60 heading into retirement, and the overwhelming majority, 99.999%, don't have adequate savings to survive decades, potentially, of retirement. So we talk about Croatia, the United Kingdom, Australia, Japan has the greatest elderly population in the world. It's a global problem, and Wall Street looting of pensions is a global problem. And, of course, all of this toxic financial waste is created here in America, made in America, and now even the Japanese and Australian pensions are getting into it.
To bring the issue right home to Ohio, the Ohio Public Employees Retirement System is in the midst of a second round of benefit cuts since 2013. This is a pension that pays more in fees than peer group pension funds in every single asset category. In two large categories, hedge funds and private equity, with more than $16 billion in assets, Ohio pays 1.12% more than peers to hedge fund managers and 76 basis points more than peers to private equity managers. Ed, give us some insight. I know this is one of the keys to your book, into how this affects beneficiaries over 30 years.
Well, one of the key concepts in the book is I talk about how it's very easy to understand the fundamentals of pensions. Pension health is driven by three factors, and those are: one, how much money is going into the pension pot. Two is how the money in the pot is managed, say, over 30 years. And three is how much money is paid out of the pot in the form of benefits. And the least understood aspect of pension health is the investments over time. That second item of pension health, how the money is invested. People talk a lot about how taxpayers don't want to put more money into a pension and how the pension benefits are too rich, but nobody talks about how and few understand how the money is being managed over time. And in my over a trillion in forensic investigations, every pension, every failed pension I have investigated had enough money pouring into the pension, and the benefits weren't rich. The problem was that the money was being grossly mismanaged, what I call gross malpractice, generally practice. That's a key concept we talk about in the book. Virtually every pension engages in gross malpractice, generally practice, and certainly Ohio does.
So if I tell you that Ohio is paying 112 basis points more than peer group average, and we both know peer groups aren't exactly managing lean and mean, what does that mean over 30 years?
Well, think of it this way, very simplistically. If your average public pension is 70% funded, has only 70% of the money it needs, and it pays excessive fees of 1% over 30 years, there's your 30%. Where'd the other 30% go? 1% excessive fees over time actually compounds to a lot more than 30%. But if you simply look at paying excessive fees of an excess fee of 1% a year for 30 years, there's your 30%. And that's about what your average public pension is, about 30% underfunded. So excessive fees can undermine retirement plans, including 401ks. It's a big driver in 401ks, and an excessive fee of 1% a year can easily cause your 401k after 30 years to have half what it should.
So that's when you've done the compounding. I mean, you're basically 1% compounds out to 50% less over the lifetime of the fund?
At least, yeah, with compounding, yeah.
Now, Ed, an Ohio lawmaker is working on legislation to investigate the pension expenses and then make reforms in law to end the abuse. As someone who's worked to investigate these public pensions around the country, what should they be doing? Are you available to consult with Ohio on this if they should reach out?
Well, first of all, of course I'm available to consult with Ohio, and I promise you Ohio will not call me. Because why would Ohio want to hire the leading expert in pension forensics in the entire world? Okay? Because they don't want to know what they're doing wrong. One of the key concepts in the another key concept of the book is, I say, you know, before pension reform, before you really need to understand the problem. So you need to investigate before you litigate or legislate. And what I found is wherever you have pension reform, there is never an investigation into the causes of the pension problems before the legislation. They legislate, they make changes to the pension without knowing what really caused the pension to struggle or fail. And as a result, pension reform almost always ends up with the pension being no better off 5 or 10 years later than it was to begin with.
Now, in the how you can stop the looting portion of your book, you call on public pension beneficiaries to set up a GoFundMe page on the internet and through social media to pay for a forensic audit of the pensions, assuming they won't cooperate, using public record laws. How much money does it take to do something like that? And is it effective using only public records, given the secrecy, contractually mandated secrecy, in so much of the pension investment portfolio?
Well, first, the book is really an action plan for pension stakeholders globally. So we talk about problems that you can immediately identify at your pension. For example, virtually all pensions, all pension boards globally lack investment experience. So look at your pension. Are the people on the board there skilled in pension matters? I can almost promise you they're not. Maybe one is, but there's no state or locality in the country that mandates the people on the pension board have investment or pension experience. We also look at the other things that you should look at are, is your pension becoming increasingly less transparent? That's a point you were just making, John. This is a global trend, and one of the things we tell people to watch out for, if your pension is becoming less transparent, that's a bad thing. I think everybody in the entire universe believes, pays lip service to the notion that greater transparency is a good thing. In all things, whether it's healthcare or whatever, transparency is a good thing. Well, but there's increasingly less transparency at the behest of Wall Street when it comes to pension. And then we also talk about other things that warning signs. Is your pension gambling more than ever on high cost, high-risk investments like hedge funds and private equity? And I talk about in the book how pensions, I found, routinely lie about the investment fees they pay, their investment performance, and their funding levels. John, in my entire 35-year career, I have never seen a pension admit that its performance sucks. All pensions claim to be average or better. Lake will be gone, right?
Yes, sir. As citizens are waking up to the problem of these high-fee, high-risk pension investments and how they really aren't delivering for the beneficiaries but are enriching Wall Street, people are asking, why would the pensions do this? Now, in your experience, have you ever seen these investments from pensions without a corresponding increase in political campaign contributions from the recipients of the high fees?
No, and of course, we can't track political contributions well anymore since Citizens United, there is a great deal of dark money flowing around the political process. But whenever you have private equity hedge funds, these alternative investments, you always, always, always have an exponential spike in the fees the pensions pay, and always, always, always plummeting transparency. Because all of these billionaires, these Wall Street gunslingers, insist that when they manage public money, they should not be subject to public scrutiny. So you will always see political contributions spiking and fees paid to Wall Street spiking in a quid pro quo. And you'll see transparency plummeting whenever these investments are coming into, as in some, into the pensions. And some pensions, like Japan and Australia, have only in the last few years been allowed to stray into these toxic investments made in America.
You know, one of the other big incentives for public pensions to put huge money in alternative investments where no one can actually be sure exactly what's contained in the portfolio is the valuation is provided by these highly compensated fund managers. So if I'm running for president, I'm a governor running for president telling national TV audience, unlike other states, I've presided over rock-solid pensions. Those wildly optimistic asset valuations make it look legit. The truth doesn't reveal itself until I'm no longer a public official and required to answer for my actions. Isn't the problem much worse even than it's shown on accounting basis now?
It certainly is, because, as you said, alternative investment managers that manage what are called hard-to-value, illiquid assets, like, for example, one case I worked on, the pension fund owned half of a small chicken farm. So what is half of a small chicken farm worth in rural Tennessee? I don't know. But I can assure you it's probably worth less than the private equity manager who had it in his portfolio. So the veracity of the returns related to alternative investments is highly questionable. The value of these investments is determined by the Wall Street billionaires that are managing them. And the higher they mark up the investments, the higher the fees they pay. So one thing we can be certain is that these investments are not worth more than the managers say they're worth. But from a forensic perspective, we can almost always be certain that they're actually worth less. So the valuations you see are best case scenario, and the actual results are probably far worse. And, of course, when the funds are really tanking, they lock up. So the immediate losses are deferred for years. Sometimes some of these funds can go on forever without realizing the loss. In Rhode Island, there's the fund there that the governor sold to the state pension that was supposed to end in 10 years. The performance is so bad, it's now been extended for 13 years. And the truth is that many of these investments can go on in perpetuity. So the worst results never get realized, get pushed off.
So they're just like zombie companies inside the the pensions portfolio.
Yes, most pensions have some of these zombie investments in their portfolio. You have to, you can find them if you look for them, but almost every pension I've seen that invests in alternative investments has some zombie funds that are locked up due to terrible performance. And getting back to a point you brought up earlier, one of the things we do talk about in the book is if you see these warning signs in your pension, then you may want to consider crowdfunding and a forensic investigation of the pension. It can be done for little money, and it can be done in stages. So,
what's little money? Because there's going to be thousands of Ohio pensioners, all of who formed groups on Facebook, who will listen to this for sure. What would they need, to get it started?
I would do it in stages. In the first stage, I would project like $50,000. So if, people are willing to put up like $25 each or $50 each, if thousands of people are willing to do it, then it could be done. It should be done in a way that the participants in the fund and other stakeholders, including taxpayers, are not paying more than, let's say, a cost of going out to dinner to have this forensic expert report done and published for the world to see. So whatever the number is, I would say $50,000 to start off, and then that may be all that's necessary, because the worst structural issues can be identified very quickly in a couple of months, in a report that can be done in a couple of months.
Well, going back to the zombie companies, the federal government changed the Government Accounting Standards Board rules on these assets, and they're supposed to be shown at fair market. But when you look at people's comprehensive annual financial reports, you nearly never see any impaired assets, despite the fact you indicate that all these pensions have all these zombie assets. Are they just ignoring accounting standards? I mean, is this an Enron accounting issue?
Well, that's another issue that I brought up in the book. I'll give you one of the things I tried to do in the book, Who Stole My Pension, is, and How to Stop the Looting, is to tell stories, real-life stories based on real-life events that I've been through. And I, about 10 years ago, was hired by the U.S. Air Pilots Pension Fund, which had been taken over by the government. U.S. Air dumped the pension fund on the government. The PBGC was managing it, and the U.S. Air pilots wanted an explanation as to what caused their pension to fail. And the first thing they told me, they all flew down, 12 of them flew down from all over the world to my home on the beach here in Florida about 10 years ago, and they said to me, you're not going to believe this, but our pension fund has never been audited. And I said, well, that's just impossible. All pensions, ERISA plans have to be audited. And what I learned was their pension had never been audited. And many state pensions have never been audited. And when I say audited, I mean audited, a full scope audit, not a limited scope audit, by a independent accounting firm, certified public accountant. Many, many states, for example, the North Carolina state pension, where I did a forensic investigation of, I think it's a $90 billion pension. My report noted the $90 billion pension, the largest pool of money in the state of North Carolina, had never been audited. So one of the things you need to look at with your pension is, has it ever been audited by an independent, not the state auditor or whatever, but by an independent accounting firm? Because what has happened over the years, John, as these pensions have migrated into alternative investments where the assets are custodied far, far away, like the Cayman Islands, nobody has checked to see if that money's even there. I've interviewed the state auditor in North Carolina. I said, do you even know the money's there? And she said, well, no, but we get annual reports. So you just roll those annual reports into your report. Nobody knows. So one of the questions I would look at for you in Ohio is, has your pension really ever been audited? I don't know the answer to that, but I can tell you in North Carolina, the $100 billion or $90 billion pension there was never audited.
Would the abuses you've seen in public pensions and that you describe in your book be a possibility if they were covered by ERISA law or even subject to state law regarding fiduciary duty?
Well, you know, they can, because the example I just gave you, the U.S. Air pilots, that was a corporate pension plan. And corporate pension plans, as you rightly note, are subject to ERISA, the comprehensive federal law governing pensions. Public pensions are not subject to ERISA, and so the protections under ERISA are not clearly available to public pensions. However, I say clearly because there are often similarities in state law or arguments that can be made that ERISA protections sort of do or should cover public pensions. But on the surface, ERISA does not apply to public pensions, and public pensions are not protected by ERISA's prohibitions. So, but in answer to your question, the U.S. Air Pilots Pension Fund, a corporate private pension, was governed by ERISA, but ERISA does not require an audit of pensions. I was surprised to learn about 10 years ago.
Hmm. It seems like the momentum is all going the other way, even at the federal level. The U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission is actually advocating allowing alternative investments to be added to private sector 401k plans, claiming the funds need access to these higher return investments. So really, are the feds any more trustworthy than states like Ohio?
No, not at all. And you're quite right. The trend, the notion that it's funny when you read the argument, Wall Street says that mom and pop really deserve access to these highfalutin, costly investments that only rich people get into today. So please let us sell these high-cost, high-risk, highly secretive, opaque investments to mom and pop in their 401k. But the truth is that these costly hedge funds and other alternatives have grossly underperformed, particularly hedge funds, have done terribly. And investment luminaries like Warren Buffett and John Bogle warn pensions and individuals to stay away from them. Warren Buffett made a well-publicized bet about 12 years ago that over a 10-year period, hedge funds would underperform an index fund, and he handily beat that bet. I think the hedge funds underperformed by 50% or more. The results are public. You can read about it. But so the idea that middle class and people who are not ultra wealthy should be entitled to engage in the same folly as the wealthiest is ridiculous. And the SEC and all federal regulators, whether it's the EPA or the FDA, are generally subject to regulatory capture. The industry runs those regulators to a large degree, and you're seeing that in this initiative to allow less sophisticated investors into these esoteric investments.
You know, there's enormous controversy over the cuts that normally come with the acquisition of a company by a private equity fund. And the money those firms use is mostly coming from public pensions, who get some of the action when the private equity company loads up their new company with as much debt as the market will allow to pay themselves a dividend. But if layoffs are needed for debt service, so be it. Could this threat to private sector employment happen without funding from public pensions supporting workers who are 100% dependent upon tax revenue from the private sector economy?
Well, there's certainly a certain amount of private equity leveraging would happen. A certain amount of private equity investing would happen without public pensions. But as you say, the real gasoline on this fire is public pension money. And so it would be happening, but to a much lesser degree. And it's something that is fundamental to public pensions is public accountability. So that's why it's so important that transparency be maintained. Wall Street has systematically eviscerated the nation's freedom of information laws everywhere, everywhere from the smallest city in California to the smallest village in Rhode Island. Wall Street has persuaded local officials that Freedom of Information Act laws should be abandoned. And once you abandon those laws, you don't have public accountability. You really don't know how the money's being invested. Is it being invested in life settlements? Is it being invested in payday loans? Is it being invested in hookers and cocaine? You don't know. So it's critical that transparency be restored. And then you can see, you know, how is the money being, is it causing job layoffs? Is it causing suffering to poor people? Is it somehow facilitating human trafficking? All of that is possible, and it's all stuff I've seen in my investigation.
Ed Seidel, thank you for joining us today on In Focus, and much, much good luck on your new book, Who Stole My Pension? How You Can Stop the Looting.
Yes, it's available on Amazon and other Barnes & Nobles and other booksellers, but it did sell out the first day. But 30,000 more copies are being printed as we speak.
I'm not surprised. Thanks. Congratulations, my friend.
Thank you very much, John.